You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What is up, Wisconsin? My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm so excited to be back in the saddle this week with each and every one of you, but especially excited to have my wonderful guest co-host with me today. After some time away, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Tom, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. It's great to be back. There's just a bit going on these days, so...
Yeah, we've got some things to talk about. Since I spent all day yesterday with our wonderful callers talking about the election outcome, it would only be fair for me to ask you, sir, how are you feeling after the big W's we chalked up on Tuesday?
I can't be more proud of what happened with our election when it comes to the state Supreme Court. I mean, just... being able to get past whatever happened with Elon Musk, but more importantly, to have everyone step up and understand the importance of this race. And I got to tell you that the existential dread I was feeling Tuesday morning has been lifted. So that to me is the biggest thing, is that's it's finally a little bit alleviated. But then we got yesterday, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. So,
yes, we will get to yesterday in due time this afternoon. Folks, we've got an incredible lineup. Not only have you got Tom Paulswitz along with me and you this afternoon, at 2:30, we're going to be joined by Dr. Liana Fix from the Council on Foreign Relations. She is an expert on Ukraine and Russia. We've been talking about so many other things that, oh yes, Ukraine, that's still a thing. Where is the peace process, at least a purported peace process by Donald Trump? We'll talk with Dr. Fix about that at 2:30. And at 3:30, I'm really excited, we are going to be joined by the chief economist for the Center on Budget and Policy. That is going to be an incredibly important conversation. That is Dr. Benja Agilore, again, the chief economist from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. We're going to talk about the impact of Donald Trump's tariffs on the agricultural industry, specifically farming. Yeah, kind of a thing here in Wisconsin. So we're going to get to all of that. We're going to take your calls, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Tom, again, returning to the election on Tuesday, what really stood out to you the most? Was there any element of not just the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, but turning also to the superintendent of public instruction election, as well as the two special elections in Florida for those House seats that were vacated, but respectively by Matt Gaetz and Mike Walz, who we'll also talk about today?
Yes, of course. The thing that struck me most is looking at the Wow counties and how much they continue to move to the left on a regular basis. I haven't had a chance to go back and look at the exact Waukesha County, because I live in Waukesha County, and I haven't had a chance to go back and look at the actual void counts, but I'm pretty sure that Crawford got more than 40% of the vote in Waukesha County, which is astounding when you think about where we've come from as a county. And the other thing that struck me was just the sheer movement from the right to the left across the entire state. And if you want to throw in the two Florida districts also, taking a 30-point gap and turning it into a 15-point gap, that's pretty remarkable. So I love to think that these are predictors of the future. I know there's a lot of work to do between now and next fall, but it does mean that I think enough independents have realized that what is happening is troublesome, and they're willing to put their vote where they see it competing best for their interests. You know, I'm excited about Wisconsin because, you know, keeping that liberal swing on the courts allows us to potentially get rid of gerrymandering even more. I think the 2026 election in the state of Wisconsin is vitally important to have a much more purple state. But also, you know, tackling things like abortion and budgeting and a whole bunch of other things that are happening across the state, I think will end up showing up in that state Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think so too. It's going to be what happens on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, the cases, the outcomes will be certainly something to watch, as well as the midterms. I mean, yes, it just seems like we're constantly cycling from one election into the next. This was a big one, no doubt. I wanted to also ask you, because Tuesday was a big day for another reason, I was especially moved by Cory Booker's 25-hour, 4-minute, and 45-second address on the floor of the Senate. Wanted to get your reactions, Tom, to that, I'm going to call it activism from the senator, yes, which seems almost like an oxymoron. Of course, a senator should be involved in political activism, but those are rarities when that sort of speech making occurs on the Senate floor. Your reactions to Senator Booker, do you think it makes a difference? Do you think it's important to people, or was it more on the performative end of things for you?
I think two things. I think one is he took action where he thought it was necessary, and I couldn't agree more. You know, getting rid of Strom Thurmond's record, I think, is good for our country to know that this black man stood up and said, wait a minute, this other person who had done this for the longest period of time was speaking out for segregation. And here is Cory Booker, who I've had a chance to meet. My wife and I had a chance to meet him about 3 or 4 years ago on the campaign trail. Very gracious person, excellent at selfies. So he's a selfie expert.
He's good at that.
He's really good at it. But just, you know, having him stand up and not only just talk for that long for 25 hours, but talk about substantive ideas and things is remarkable. And it wasn't a whim. It wasn't anything else. It was well thought out. I couldn't be, you know, that coupled with the election, I think, at least for me, was able to help lift that existential dread and say, okay, it's time for everyone else to take action. I'm looking forward to go and marching this weekend on Saturday to just show some support and have a voice in saying enough is enough. And I'm hoping a whole bunch of other people have found a place to go on Saturday the 5th to march and say, this is it. Like, this is our country. And if we don't stand up for it like Cory Booker did, we might not have it.
Yeah, folks, you can join Tom and I at the Federal Building in downtown Milwaukee. That hands-off protest against Elon Musk, against the gutting of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that kicks off at noon. Again, the Federal Building in downtown Milwaukee. If you want to find out where more of those hands-off protests may be going on in your neck of the woods across the state of Wisconsin, just Google hands-off protest April 5th. There's lots of information. I've posted the link to those protests and the locations thereof on the show's X account, which is Maggie Dawn Show. Also on my LinkedIn, that's where I use my full name, Margaret Dawn. You can find that information there as well.
And Blue Sky. Let's not forget Blue Sky.
And Blue Sky. I'm trying to use more in the Blue Sky. Yep. I already forgot my username and login. I had to go look all that up again. Got to get better at the Blue Sky. We had an interesting comment, Matt, from Middleton. I'd say challenging a bit of your characterization. Matt from Middleton on the text line says this. The WOW counties aren't moving to the left. We moved towards truth and rational thought. People aren't becoming lefties. Your reaction, Tom?
I think he's right. I think it's a repudiation of what's happening in the MAGA world more than anything else. It just so happens that it's moving towards the party that's trying not to move to the right. And I know there's a lot of Democrats out there who think that Democratic messaging should be moving to the right. I completely disagree. I think it's still about, you know, sticking up for everyone, making sure we have the backs of every person in this country, and looking for equality and equity across everything. And, you know, if that's a leftist attitude, then I guess I'll be branded by it. But I think it's more center, I think, than people realize.
Yes,
so,
center in post MAGA cult land, right? Yeah. Like centrism starts to look left. Mm-hmm. It's not, right? Like rationality and reasonableness takes on a patina or can be claimed by some to be left. It's not. It was funny. We had a texter the other day, Tom, that texted in and was calling me a radical left-wing lunatic. And I was just like, I'm not super left. I'm just not. I'm a pragmatist. I don't like bullies. I don't like liars. I don't like chaos. I don't like incompetence. And if that to some listeners' ears might make me sound like a big lefty, yeah, I think we need to interrogate that, right? Like, are we calling people hyper-partisans because they're lodging disagreement with a hyper-partisan, if you get my drift, right?
Like, there's not two opinions about whether corruption is good or not, right? There's not two opinions about whether we should have incompetence at the highest levels of our government. I don't think there's a difference of opinion there. I think what we have a difference on is policy, but we no longer talk about policy because that's not really what it's about anymore. It's about people and it's about their agendas and what they're trying to do. So when I spout anything that has to do with policy that's more fact-based, people like to try to put it into a bucket, and it doesn't deserve a bucket because it's the truth.
Correct. And it's funny, Tom. Great minds, my friend. I'll just say that. And part of that discussion, right, what I was talking about is that we need, and I don't like the way the media, at least in the United States, has gotten to this place, I think, adopting the framework of the far right when it comes to opinions, right, that you must offer up both opinions as if they are both equally valid. Well, that's not true. As you put it so eloquently, Tom, there aren't two opinions that are valid about whether or not corruption or money in politics is good. There's one opinion, and that is that it is bad. Folks, you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got Tom Paulsiewicz with us this afternoon. You can join us 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Tom, you still there, or are we having a little bit of a technical glitch? Want to make sure I can still hear you.
I think I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Great. I certainly can. As long as I can hear you, I don't know if people can still see me. If you're watching us here on YouTube, that is quite all right. I wanted to get to another bit of news on the other side. We're going to have to take care of a little break here in a second. But here's the news that I want to discuss with you. Breaking news just in the hour or so before we were about to come on the air that apparently Laura Loomer, a 9/11 conspiracy wingnut, was meeting with Donald Trump in the Oval Office and gave him a list of people to act from the National Security Council, which apparently Donald Trump has done. What does this mean for our military security, our nation's security, and your family? We discuss more with you and Tom Paulsiewicz. We'll take more calls and your thoughts on the text and phone lines.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces, smiling faces. Sometimes.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got Tom Paulsiewicz with us this afternoon in the guest host chair. We have got you on the caller and text lines, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I think we've got Tom from LA. Always a pleasure to talk with him. Tom from LA, how you doing this afternoon? Say hello to Tom. What are your thoughts?
I'm doing great. And Tom, it's great to hear from you as well. First, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Maggie, I'm glad you touched on this subject because I really would love to know what the hell does left and right and middle even mean? When people say this, I would like for them to give us explicit examples of what they mean by left or right or middle. Because if it's Medicare for all, then I guess I'm a far loony lefty. If it's for Social Security strengthening, then I guess I'm a far loony lefty. But what's interesting is 90% of the country is in favor of these things, so I guess they're yes. all far loony lefties. But I think we need to ask the question when they say that. Tell me what you mean by being left, right, or middle. Also, I don't call it fair and balanced. I call it truth with facts. I am not in favor yes. of both sidesism, and I wish it would die.
Yes.
And last, can we make the bad Bradley the poster person for getting money out of politics after her statements that she made the other day about Crawford? Maybe we should start saying, hey, if you're really that interested in getting money out of politics, which we all on the quote-unquote left are, then I guess she is too, because that's what she said. She said that Democrats buy elections. Well, you know what? We can solve that really, really quickly by overturning Citizens United and actually bringing government, restoring government back to we the people rather than to the corporations and the oligarchs.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more, Tom. Thanks for that call. Here's what I, folks, if you don't know what Rebecca Bradley, a fellow Supreme Court Justice for the state of Wisconsin, said following Susan Crawford's victory, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but she basically said, oh, Democrats buy elections, as if Elon Musk didn't spend $26 million on this election, as if he wasn't giving away checks like lottery winnings to people who would pledge their fealty to Elon and Trump's selected candidates, as if none of that was happening. She then went on and said she's not looking forward to working with Susan Crawford, bashed her. Rebecca Bradley deserves to be impeached and removed from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Her demeanor, the way that she writes opinions, is so below any baseline of judicial decorum. It's shocking to me. And again, if she's so fired up about getting money out of politics, I say, here, here, let's get that constitutional amendment started, since the Supreme Court of these United States seems to have gotten that one deeply, unequivocally wrong. Tom, wrong. Your thoughts in response to our friend Tom.
Yeah. Tom, first off, great points. I mean, you hit it right on the head, right? It's understanding, like, okay, when you say left, right, or center, what do you actually mean? But also, I love the fact that, you know, what she should have said was, is Democrats successfully buy elections. I don't agree with the statement either. But when you're when you spend that much money and you're unsuccessful buying an election, I mean, Elon Musk, Dick Eline, I mean, there's a slew of these conservative people who like to put a whole bunch of money into losing candidates. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It'd be far better to put it into policy and put it into door knocking and put it into convincing people that you have the right viewpoint.
Volunteer door knocking. We just have to say that because Charlie right. Kirk and Turning Point USA out there sending the paid door knockers.
Right. But here's the thing is that when you do this, people think both sides do it, right? So that when the Democratic Party gets billionaires to give, then the Republicans can give, and it's exactly the same emphasis and the same result. It isn't, though. I mean, if anybody's ever been out door knocking, there are people who do it because they care, and then there are people who do it who are paid. And most of the time, what I've seen is it's on the Republican side that they're paid. I have not, in my entire time out there door knocking, have ever run into somebody from the Democratic Party who's being paid to door knock for a Democrat. I don't see it happening. It's not to say it hasn't happened, but not in Wisconsin is the way I would put it.
Well, and how about this distinction, Tom? I guarantee you, you ask big billionaire donors on the Dem side, you put George Soros on a mic and you say, George, do you think we should amend the Constitution to get money out of politics? George Soros says yes.
Yes.
The billionaires that support Democrats want the corruption to stop. They don't want this to be
right.
the state of play. And that is a difference, right? Like, they're supporting yes. Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. They don't want to see veterans hurt by these right. draconian cuts of 82,000 employees. Those are the differences. They're not advancing billionaire tax cuts. They're advancing an agenda that's asking for more billionaire taxes. Those are differences. Very fascinating. Also, Brian from Milwaukee weighing in as well, echoing Tom's sentiments. Brian texting this, most people want democracy. We hate what Trump is doing in office. And finally, so are Republicans. This is less left and right. This is more about what's good for the vast majority of us and democracy, small d. That was what was proven in Wisconsin on April 1st. Indeed. Just to close the loop before we run out of time here, Tom, your reaction to what is an absolutely stunning spectacle. Laurel Loomer, a September 11 conspiracy theorist, viewed as extreme even by many MAGA allies, apparently in the White House giving Donald Trump a hit list of people to fire from the National Security Council. Your reactions, Tom?
Par for the course. You know, no one is being fired for incompetence or lack of results or, you know, doing things outside of protocol. People are being fired for lack of fealty and lack of loyalty. And I really don't see that changing over the next 2 years. So I think it's par for the course, and Trump's good at listening to the last person who gave him any information. So I'm sure it was Laurel Loomer, and he decided to act on whatever she decided was the right thing to do.
Laura Loomer, the lunatic, making our national security personnel decisions. We had Mike Waltz sending, you know, our nation secrets on Gmail and a signal chat with an Atlantic reporter.
Putting pilots in danger.
Yeah. Sheer incompetence.
Yes.
We're going to talk about these national security implications on a broader level with Dr. Leona Fix, the Council on Foreign Relations. What is going on with Ukraine? Let's not keep our eye from getting distracted from that ball. If you want some more mixed metaphors. Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a fine co-host with me this afternoon, Tom Paulsiewicz, and we're very pleased to bring back to the show Dr. Leona Fix. She's a scholar at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is basically America's, I don't know, A-plus grade think tank on all things foreign policy. It's where the smartest people work, who know all
about
this. That's
too much praise, Maggie. Thank you.
Hardly.
I mean, it's not just a bunch of people who watched some YouTubes and then got together. And that's
Well, we think about the YouTubes for long.
There you go. It's so great to have you back, Dr. Fix.
Thank you.
We have been incredibly focused on these elections that have happened just this past week, as well as the economic chaos. Looks like the S&P is going to be down potentially well over 5% today with Donald Trump's announcement of tariffs, which do relate back up, of course, to foreign policy. But it seems that for a lot of Americans, what is happening in Ukraine and the bizarre, I think I can use that word, triangulation that Donald Trump is attempting with Vladimir Putin has fallen a little bit out of our attention span momentarily. It's so very important to bring you back. Where do things stand right now? Let's just do a status update. Do we have a ceasefire? Are we closer to a potential peace deal? What does that look like? What is the current status, Dr. Fix?
So it actually looks like the Trump administration is currently stuck with this, with its approach. So the idea was you bring both sides to the table by applying sticks and carrots to both sides. And there has been a lot of outrage about the very strong and big sticks that have been applied to Ukraine. Towards Russia, the Trump administration has been a little bit more accommodating. They have tried through positive reinforcement, through concessions, convince the Russian side that a ceasefire is in their interest. But now we're in a situation where Ukraine has agreed to a full and complete ceasefire, and Russia does not. And Russia instead demands a continuation of talks about what they call the root causes of the problem, which is Russian code speak for let's talk whatever we don't like what has happened in the last 20 years. And Moscow is underestimating that President Trump's patience is going to run out. He wants to see a ceasefire Russia wants, it's dragging its feet, and that's where we are right now, and why Donald Trump has become more critical of Vladimir Putin in his recent comments.
I have been a bit surprised at Trump's expressed frustration publicly with Vladimir Putin. How realistic is it, or is it simply a fool's errand to think that we might be able to get Vladimir Putin through carrot or stick to a ceasefire? Is that actually a possibility, Dr. Fix?
I would not completely exclude it, but it depends on the sticks that you're willing to apply. So strong sticks would be, for example, more sanctions on Russia, especially targeting oil, which continues to be one of the main sources for Russia's regime stability. Also, you can maximize the support and the military support you give to Ukraine to tell Vladimir Putin, well, look, if you don't come to the table, Ukraine will actually start beating you again on the battlefield. So there are some ways that the United States can apply pressure, but so far the hope seems to be in the White House that because of the special friendly relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, some progress might be achieved via that channel. And Vladimir Putin has obviously tried to cultivate that. He sent President Trump a portrait. He talked about how he has prayed for President Trump after the assassination attack. But that alone will not be enough for Vladimir Putin to avoid what he doesn't want, a ceasefire.
Yeah, it just seems to me, though, it's a little bit performative, and that's just my opinion on Trump's side, is he's got to at least pretend to say something, because doesn't it seem like every week there's a delay in the ceasefire that it's actually to Russia's advantage to continue talking versus going right to a ceasefire? Because as I understand, Ukraine doesn't have a great flow of weapons coming into their country at this point. So every week that goes by, it increases Russia's hand. So to speak.
Russia wants peace talks without a ceasefire. So they want peace talks and a normalization of U.S.-Russia relations without giving anything in return. And I think even for a Trump administration, that's difficult. What would be smarter is to agree to a ceasefire, keep it in place for a couple of weeks, and then blame Ukraine for breaking the ceasefire. That would be something, if I were an advisor to the Kremlin, which thank God I'm not, which would be my recommendation to Vladimir Putin right now. But he doesn't seem to be willing to go that far and take that step.
Let me ask a related question, and I'll just note this for folks that are listening. I went through combed through the list of tariffs that have been deployed by Donald Trump in the last 24 hours, notably Russia not on the list. Now, granted, there's a lot of sanctions and other things in place, but it's if we're taxing, putting tariffs on islands that have only penguins, you would think even as symbol, we would include Russia on that list. But getting back to specifically the situation with Ukraine, Dr. Fix, is there any solution setting aside a potential ceasefire as the contours, as the negotiation over a more permanent peaceful resolution are sketched out? Is there any permanent solution here that you think would be acceptable to Vladimir Putin that returns Ukraine to its post or pre-invasion state? And we can, however you want to date that, depending on whom you're talking to, that's the most recent Russian incursion or going back even further. Or do you think that Vladimir Putin is going to hold firm that at least some of the Ukrainian territory that Russia has in effect annexed is going to have to be turned over to Russia if there is a more permanent solution reached?
Yeah, so the best outcome that we can hope for is a frozen conflict. And frozen is not the right word, because those frozen conflicts are never frozen. There's actually continuous fighting on the ground. But what could work is to, if Vladimir Putin would keep what he has, it would not be obviously acknowledged as Russian territory, never, ever. But the rest of Ukraine could move towards the West, could move towards the European Union, could move towards integration into NATO structures. But again, from Vladimir Putin's perspective, the aim is a neutralized Ukraine, not only a neutral Ukraine, a neutralized Ukraine that belongs to Russia's sphere of influence in the same way as Belarus belongs to Russia's sphere of influence by being not de facto a state anymore, but basically just a region that belongs to the bigger Russian Empire there. Now, the hope is that Vladimir Putin would at some point, through pressure, be willing to postpone his aim, to say, for the moment, I'm not able to achieve this. Let me turn this into a frozen conflict. I'll try again in 5 years. That's the best what we can hope for. And to becoming back to the tariffs that you mentioned, there is just a little bit of trade between the US and Russia, but there still exists some trade, which again shows that there is some conscious thinking about the Russia part in the administration to deliberately exclude it from this really, really long list of inhibited or uninhibited countries that were tariffed.
Yeah, so I think one of the questions I have in the back of my head is, as the United States has pulled back on funding, especially military funding to Ukraine, the European Union and specifically NATO has said, all right, we're going to try to step in at some point. How long is that going to take, and how does that play into these negotiations?
So there are two aspects to that. The first aspect is money. That is solvable because the European Union is a rich bloc. Also, the European Union could finally seize the Russian frozen assets that are in Belgium and could use that for Ukraine. The second part is the weapons that Ukraine needs. Some of those are only produced in the United States. So even if the European Union says we take over all of the military needs from Ukraine, that's just staff that European NATO allies cannot send to Ukraine. So the United States needs to stay in the picture. And then there's also the question, if Europeans sometimes very proudly say, we will help Ukraine to say no to a bad deal. But in the end, Europeans are also very vulnerable, right? And if we have an escalation dominance where Europeans are threatened that, for example, protection through NATO will be withdrawn if they don't support a certain deal that is struck between Ukraine and Russia, at some point Europeans will think about their own security. So I appreciate all the efforts that Europeans are doing. I think it's important, but Europeans alone cannot be the saver of last resort for Ukraine if the United States disappears.
I want to ask you, Dr. Fix, and folks, if you're just joining us, you've tuned in, we've got Dr. Liana Fix here on the Maggie Dawn Show. She is with the Council on Foreign Relations, an expert on Russia and Ukraine. I want to ask a question that's going to sound a bit cheeky, but I don't mean it that way at all. How is a peace deal negotiated with two leaders, meaning Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, who are two of the world's most consummate liars and spin doctors, and two of the world's most consummate bullies? Part of peace processes is that representations can be made in negotiations that can be relied upon even by nations that are in conflict. Where that is not present, how do you even facilitate a peace process negotiation? This has been a question that has been dogging me. I think we're seeing it cropping up again in economic policy. How do businesses make decisions if you can't rely on actors taking consistent and somewhat predictable action? This is that translated into the peace process for Ukraine and Russia. How do we move forward when we've got two men that are at the table who seem to change their viewpoint depending on which way the wind blows, who will say anything and frankly bully anyone, allies included, by any means necessary to get what is in their best interest in the next day, not in the best interest of their people or their country in the medium or long term?
Well, that is exactly this concern. It's exactly why the Europeans are right now talking about putting boots on the ground in Ukraine if a ceasefire is achieved. And the idea behind that is, can we really trust both Trump and Putin to comply with a deal. Would it be helpful if Europeans would be on the ground to deter Vladimir Putin from breaking a ceasefire? In theory, that's a good idea. In practice, obviously, Europe's militaries and armies are not in great shape. So if they put even a small contingent into Ukraine, how much is actually left in core Europe? So if Russia tries to test Europe's willingness, how much is left that would sort of follow up from this initial contingent? And the second question for Europeans is, well, would Donald Trump actually support that? So would he, if we put our troops on the ground, would he tell Vladimir Putin, you better not touch those troops or we have a problem? Or would he say, well, I don't care if there's an escalation with those troops. But in principle, the idea for Europeans is how can we secure a deal if we cannot trust both sides?
Short question here. Is Ukraine joining NATO off the table for the foreseeable future, Dr. Fix?
Well, I think it would be the wrong decision to take it off the table because it's the cheapest and the best way to secure Ukraine's and Europe's security. But I certainly don't see it in the next 4 years. Again, we would not have predicted what happens in 2022 with Sweden and Finland becoming NATO members. So I'm certainly not going to exclude it for the next 10 years. Many things can happen.
We're approaching the 76th anniversary of NATO on April 8th. I was introduced to you and we spoke for the first time a year ago in celebration of the 75th anniversary of the world's strongest, longest lasting, most enduring military alliance. What do you think the future holds for NATO, Dr. Fix, in light of Trump's utter unreliability?
Well, hopefully increased defense spending by Europeans that at some point will make it less dangerous for Europeans to fully rely on the United States and finally take their own security.
Thanks so much. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you, Dr. Fix, especially with your voice a little froggy. We'll have you back again quite soon. Keep it locked. Tom and I are going to zoom out, tell you what the big picture is when we come back after these brief messages. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-SAVE. I feel the sky tumbling down, tumbling down, tumbling down, tumbling down.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a guest co-host with me today, as I do nearly every Thursday. His name's Tom Paulswitz, a two-time congressional candidate, Navy veteran, all-around reasonable guy. And from Tom and I, a big thanks to Dr. Liana Fix from the Council on Foreign Relations, helping us get an update on the Ukraine situation. All of this, of course, in the context of this completely loony meeting between the loony Laura Loomer and Donald Trump, apparently resulting in the firing of some six National Security Council officials, yet to be clear who they are. Apparently, it's not the firing of Michael Walls. Though I think firing for cause in this situation would clearly be justified. Tom, I was really interested in Dr. Fix's responses to, you know, how do you negotiate with a liar?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, it's one of those things, and I think you hit it right on the head, where how do you trust two people that are known to always renege on the deals that they create? How do you create a deal that somebody thinks is actually going to stick? And then how do you create a deal that excludes probably the most important people that are part of or should be part of the deal? So all this, but you and I were talking earlier today, and I think this is a good time to bring this up, is this is all a concert. It's like a concert of bringing together the idea that we're going to pull everything from outside of the United States back in. and that globalism doesn't really matter, that the word globalist is actually a bad thing. Like somehow, and I don't know how it happened, but being a globalist, which to me is just that every human being has the same wants, needs, and desires and should have a chance to fulfill them, is somehow at odds to the direction our country should be heading. So this America First idea is, it's happening with the tariffs, it's happening with NATO, it's happening all across the spectrum in regards to how do we view ourselves within the society of the world. And at least for the last 70 years, we've been a leader in the free world, fighting for democracy, not always doing the right thing, not always necessarily doing it above board, but at least the premise was, is that we were there to stick up for democracy. And now here we are today, and it's all being torn apart. All the fundamental foundations are being knocked down. And one of the things, because my wife and I were talking about this the other day, is I don't know if and how we rebuild the trust that we've broken across the world. I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if we can, but that's what's happening today.
And that to me, first, interesting commentary on the word globalism. When I hear people use the word globalist or globalism in a negative context, what I think they mean is I stand against the acquisition of money and power to the detriment of all other values and goods, meaning the exploitation of humans by any means necessary to create wealth for the very, very few. The unthinking integration of global financial markets to exploit more and more labor, right? Like when I think of people who take an anti-globalist stance, I think they very much mean to stand up for global human rights and human dignity and protections of labor, respect. When I say protection of labor, what I mean is respect for labor.
Yes.
That the business owner doesn't get wealthy without the workers, right? And that is the social compact, the basis of not just our country, but the general social compact is if you're willing to work hard, you shouldn't live in poverty. You shouldn't worry about keeping a roof over your head. I thought those were some of our basic principles. And we do, Tom, seem to be moving contrary to that. We've got a caller, Andrew from Detroit, on the line. Cal, let's see what Andrew's got to say this afternoon. Say hello to Tom. Andrew, what are your thoughts?
Hello, Maggie. Hello, Tom. This subject is incredibly interesting. You were asking how you deal with somebody like Putin. Well, we got to go back in history and look, how did we deal with somebody like Hitler? How did we deal with somebody like Mussolini? And it's awful to think like that this early, but is it this early? And as far as the United States, they can't trust us anymore. If we had democracy again for another 15 years, you can't trust us.
Yeah, Andrew, I hear all of that. And I'll ask this question. What do we do when we can't trust our own president to care about facts or even care about reality? The big picture here to me today, Donald Trump plunging every single stock index into the negative, global economic chaos. Estimates from some economists I've heard today is that we will have lost $4 trillion in value from your 401ks and from businesses in the S&P alone today. Had Joe Biden driven the stock markets down 5%, Donald Trump and Republicans would have called for his impeachment in terms that sounded like calling for his beheading, right? And I don't remember Donald Trump ever admitting on the campaign trail that we're going to pursue tariff policy and it's going to cost you all more, that we're going to cause you pain economically, and that's okay, that you need to line up and say thank you. In fact, I remember him saying exactly the opposite. We're going to do tariff policies and everything will get cheaper. He knew that was a lie. He knew it then. He stood on stage, and it seems to me that no one cared. What is actually going on here? Because I want you, me, and Tom on the flip side of the top of the hour to talk about what really is going on. What is all this about? Because Donald Trump, Howard Lutnick, and a lot of them all know that this is bogus economic policy. So why are they doing it? Why aren't we hearing more from CEOs? and our other business leaders to condemn this nonsense. We discuss on the flip side. Don't go anywhere. News, weather, and sports next, and then I'm back with Tom, 855-75-CIVIC, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.